Hi, everybody. My name is Jesse Wells. I'm an alcoholic. By the grace of God, actions in AA, and sponsorship, I've been sober since January 7th of 1996. Can we have a moment of silence and gratitude for the AA recoveries over the past 75 years? And our meeting is going to be on our three legacies, recovery, unity, and service. And I do want to thank the HAT for allowing me to participate in this meeting and to get up here and share a little bit and introduce our speakers. It's truly an honor and a privilege to get to do this in anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, and here is means a lot. And I just want to say I remember me and my wife, before she was my wife, went to the International in Minneapolis 10 years ago, and at that time we were just we rode a bus up there together from Oklahoma. Oh, by the way, my home group is the Primary Purpose Group in Norman, Oklahoma. Got to get that in there. And we rode the bus up together, and we weren't talking yet because we were just staring at each other across the aisle. And I was about 3 years sober then, and she was a little over a year sober. And right after that, we got together and we started dating and got married, and have been married happily ever since. And to come from there to here, she gets to participate and speak in a meeting tomorrow, and I got to chair the meeting today. It's just amazing for people like us to come here. And I can tell you that if it was not for Alcoholics Anonymous and the three legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's no way that would happen, that I fell into a group of people that held close to these three legacies, that practiced these principles in all their affairs, that cared about Alcoholics Anonymous enough to show respect for it and to pass that on the way it was passed on to them. My life is forever changed, and I can never pay back that debt to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope that my actions in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous show the respect that I have for AA and for what it has done for my life and my family's life and the people that have never even been to an AA meeting that know me and are so much better off for that. I am extremely grateful, and I hold dear all of these things in my life. And in our last meeting, we had a lady that was talking about, not always, you know, she tries to do it 75% of the time, and she is far more advanced in Alcoholics Anonymous than me. I think she had 41 years sober. And I try to do that, and I try to pass this stuff on, and I'm active in service work. I sponsor people, and I am sponsored, and I attend regular committed meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hold close to those things. I take 12-step calls. I do that stuff because people said that was important. And if it wasn't for those people, I don't know where I'd be. I probably would not be standing here today, and I probably would not be sober. And I'm grateful that their example was bright enough in my life, and my desperation was low enough that I picked up and did whatever they asked and continue to try to do that today. And so our first speaker is from Taunton, Massachusetts. That is Anne Marie.
All right. The microphone has a mind of its own, we're told. I am an alcoholic. My home group is Living Our Traditions. My name is Anne Marie Matulis. My sobriety date is June 10th, 1983. That was God's idea of a joke. I had nothing to do with that. Actually, it was an Al-Anon nurse who helped me with that one. She said when you go to AA and they ask if you have a dry date, you tell them it's today. I said, okay, June 10th, what's the big deal? And she laughed all the way down the hallway. Gotta love her. I had the privilege of serving Area 30 Eastern Massachusetts as the Panel 39 delegate to the General Service Conference, and that was back in what some people in my area still refer to as the dark ages of 1989 and 1990. It wasn't that long ago. They seem to think, you know, back then, when you didn't have internet, you know, or cell phones, you actually had to write letters and sign them. And I said, yes, and it's an art most of you don't have. Which, of course, brings me to AA 36 Spiritual Principles, because I just put myself in conflict with Warranty 5. Now, I'm going to throw out a lot of stuff, and this may be one of the more unorthodox presentations you've heard about the three legacies. If you came in anticipating one of us was going to address the steps and another the traditions and another the concepts, or we were going to talk about personal recovery and then unity with the traditions and then someone would talk about service of the concepts, you're in the wrong room. We're going to talk about what my home group calls the incredible tapestry. And that is taking the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, the 12 concepts and their 6 warranties and weaving them together into my daily life. It is a daily inventory that has nothing to do with service beyond the home group in and of itself. This is not a service talk. This is how do I find the things that I heard when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I heard the phrase emotional sobriety. And it sounded like an oxymoron to me. No. No, never had that. And then I heard emotional balance. Yeah, definitely never heard that one. And then very early on, because I was raised by a group of real old-timers in Alcoholics Anonymous, I got God's grace, brought me to the city of Brockton, Massachusetts. Now, I will tease about and joke about Brockton, where it's Halloween every day and a full moon all the time. But aside from that, there was a wonderful, when I got sober, wonderful army of old-timers who really didn't care what you thought, what you felt. It was, don't drink, ask me help, go to meetings, work the steps. The house burned down. Did you drink? To which I, of course, had a two-word response, which was not Merry Christmas. But then I had to grow up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so they taught me, someone introduced me to Bill's The Best of Bill, which was a little tiny grapevine booklet at the time. And in it, there's an essay on emotional sobriety. And in that essay, Bill W. talks about finding his quiet place in the bright sunshine. And that took my breath away. And I said, what do I have to do to get there? And so over a period of time and years, this has never been a quick process. It's a day at a time. It's baby steps every day. There are never, I haven't yet found any quantum leaps in my process. I learned how to take AA's 36 principles and put them together. First, I learned about applying the 12 steps. And that was about saving me from myself. And immediately, I was not even 4 months, 5 months sober, and old-timers were introducing me to the 12 traditions because I was having some serious philosophical differences with what I considered antiquated writing at the time. And I went, well, that might be okay for you, but that doesn't apply to me. And they loved me into understanding about that. They loved me into understanding AA's primary and only purpose. And that my purpose is to, what did that just do? And that my purpose is to be available to the sick and suffering alcoholic. And very early in my recovery, I discovered that the sick and suffering alcoholic is not always the newcomer. Drives me nuts. Sorry about it, guys. Whoever's under 5 years, God bless you. I love you. We're glad you're here. But let's talk to about those who are 40 years plus, who are left sick, suffering, abandoned, avoided. Gee, we haven't seen so-and-so for X number of weeks. Why the hell didn't you pick up the phone and call or go knock on the door? So that's what the old-timers taught me to do. And in the traditions, they taught me about the importance of unity. I learned about tradition 4 right out of the gate. Because as far as I was concerned, there must have been a period at the end of that sentence when it says, my group can do anything it wants. Autonomy, I loved. Because I had never had any in my life. And I understand that was a me thing. That was an adolescent attitude and behavior. And I had to learn to step away from that and to grow up. And that's what these 36 principles are all about. My home group has a weekend thing that we do for the Incredible Tapestry. So to take that and put it into less than 20 minutes is impossible. I mean, I'm about to say, oh, I can do that. No, you can't. Shut up. You know, just offer a snippet or two, will you please, to what you can do with this. So I left Massachusetts a week ago, more than a week ago, a week and a half now. And that journey was very focused and very determined and decided. And we went from eastern Massachusetts through the first, we did 13 states in a very short period of time, because my goal was to get to the Rockies. Once upon a time, long ago, far away, I used to run away to the Rockies. And it was important for me to go back and really dig into the Rockies to make sure they were as beautiful as I remembered them. And they were, and they are. Take your breath away. Of course, I'm not impressed with the speed limit of doing a 7-mile steep grade at about 80 miles an hour, but it brings a whole new meaning to adrenaline flow. And from there, we went over to Grand Junction, Colorado. And from there, we went to Bryce Canyon National Park, and I cried. This is the tapestry, the majesty, the power, and the awe of what nature has for us to be able to cherish and protect and live with. And that is the same majesty and power that I am in awe of what happens when we learn to put, and I have learned to put, those 36 principles together on a daily basis into my daily life. Not worrying about what you're doing, but how do I learn to live this better? And from Bryce, we went to a place called Krodkorum that I had never heard of. But two people I work with said, you must see it. Now I know why. And if you haven't, go see it. It's a state park in Utah. And from there, we went to the north rim of the Grand Canyon, where I discovered that I'm really too old to be balanced well enough to do a rim walk. No. Never again. You know, next time someone wants to go out to Bright Angel Point, you go right ahead. I will sit right here and look over it. And we had these, like, 12 guys all dressed in uniform. I couldn't read what their logo said. And what are they doing? They're marching right in single file right down. I said, is this the Army, Marine Corps, Black Ops? Whoever they are, I want to give them a push. Because they're just right down the middle of the rim walk like this, which, again, was a Warranty 5. So now twice I've mentioned Warranty 5. For those who don't know, the warranties are in Concept 12. You can find Concept 12 among the 12 concepts in that book that only 30,000 are typically sold each year. It's called an AA service manual. You do not have to be in service to benefit from it. But Concept 12 has 6 warranties. And Warranty 5 is one of the best examples I can give you, the snippet I can give you about the tapestry. So we have Warranty 5. In its essence, it says that AA never defends itself publicly. Never defends itself publicly. We've all heard the talk shows. We've all seen the news. Those have been sober longer than I may or may not have resisted the temptation to call a talk radio show and say, are you guys nuts? That's not AA. We never defend ourselves publicly. So how do I do about that personally and professionally? When you gossip and character assassinate me, I had to learn to not defend that. Because typically it wasn't the truth. That's not an easy thing to do. Because we have this built-in knee-jerk reaction that wants to smack you upside of the head, get you to stand up and pay attention to what I'm saying and understand me, crash against the wall. Oh, right, sorry. Nonviolence. We have an 11-step prayer that says it is better to comfort than to be comforted, and it's about understanding, and it's about shedding light on the darkness. That's your solution through this whole tapestry. Seriously, that's how it's done. Balancing that. Can anybody do that on any? What are you kidding? Of course not. You know, I don't know of any human being on the face of God's earth who can work that 11-step prayer perfectly. Most of us can do a reasonable job with it, and certainly not all things on all days. So with Warranty 5, I have to be careful. I don't have to defend myself. That is not easy professionally. I know this is on tape. I think I'm pretty safe that he will never hear it. And if by the time he does, it's because he's finally in the right place. So there is only one way to do things in the company I work for. I'm a portfolio specialist. I work private and public sector. And these 36 principles have to come into my life on a regular basis. And so if I don't defend myself, I need to stand firm in the face of scathing criticism sometimes. That 9 out of 10 times seriously has no basis of foundation. I just happen to be the one who walked around the corner. And I know we want to justify it, we want to rationalize it, and Warranty 5 says no. Have faith and courage to step back and stay silent. That is a tough principle to bring into my daily life on a regular basis. It's not easy, but no one said this would be easy. The other part of Warranty 5 is the one that I'm sure no one has ever had any trouble with. It's about being personally punitive. In AA? No, of course not. Yeah, right. Okay. So the treasurer ran away with the treasury, and who wants to take him to court and do a whole bunch of other things? Or someone did something without asking your permission, which then brings us back to step 7, and here's the tapestry weaving. Page 76 on step 7 says that fear drives us, that we are afraid we're going to lose something we think we have or not get something we demand. I've always noticed that it did say demand. It didn't say asked for, wished for, wanted. It said demand. And that the difference between a simple request and a command is obvious to anybody. Yeah, no, not most drunks that I know. So you take that tapestry, Warranty 5, I'm not defending myself. There is nothing, I do not, even if I'm dead right, I don't have to come back and tell you that. I leave that between me and God, and that we don't take punitive action. And punitive action usually comes in the form of sarcasm. You know, little zingers. Well, and we get better. We don't let them fall out of our mouth, but the ticker tape goes right across the forehead. Yeah. Now I want you to think, the next time you hear it, you say, that was a Warranty 5. And you owe that person an amends. Aren't you happy to think about that one? I remember my friends Mike and Jackie from Vermont, and they were coming down to Massachusetts for a tapestry weekend, and someone cut them off. The driving was not clear, and they didn't say a word. They both drove on for a few more minutes and said, were you thinking what I was thinking? And they said, damn, she's going to say it's a Warranty 5 thing. But that is the challenge. As I think, so shall I live. So you've got that process and that part of it. Concepts 1 and 2 talk about my ability to handle responsibility and authority. And then concept 2 says my ability to delegate that responsibility. And I can't look at that part of it without bringing in the tapestry that really sits home, and that's 3, 7, and 11. Steps 3, 7, 11. Am I really, really embracing God's will when I delegate responsibility, have authority, have responsibility? Or am I taking control of it? Am I being fear-driven yet again? Concept 4 talks about our ability to have full participation. And if I cannot accept that, and I want someone to be on the outside, I just took Warranty 5, punitive action. And on top of that, I probably got a Tradition 12 issue. I'm dealing with personality versus principles, and I'm sure no one has ever had that problem before in your home group. And my goal is to find that quiet place in the sunshine. So what I was taught to do was on a regular basis, and this is what my home group does. Every Friday night, we study the concepts, the steps, the traditions. We use the big book. We use conference-approved AA literature to buffer up. So if we're talking about tradition five, we have problems other than alcohol and a member's eye view. If we are talking about anonymity, my God, there's a wealth of information you can find there. What a great idea. We have the grapevine on digital. We can get it. You can get all kinds of great stuff. It may take us 3 to 4 months to study one principle because of the way we weave things around it. And every night we walk out of there going, whoa. We laugh a lot. We cry often. We celebrate. We say, whoa, I guess I need to do something about that. It is just an incredible journey to get fired up about. And as we went from a Bryce Canyon to Kodachrome to the northern rim of the Grand Canyon, and then through Navajo country, Hopi, Apache, back to Navajo, into New Mexico and into Texas, there was no way I could deny the presence of a power so far greater than myself that put all that together. And how grateful I am to those who came before me who brought these 36 spiritual principles, of which you've only heard a snippet of how to weave them, into being. It is a constant spiritual challenge. But it's never dull and boring. Never dull and boring. Do I have emotional balance? On occasion, some people say yes. My friends who've known me for the last 27 years say, God, you're so mellow, you're boring.
You're boring.
You know, I used to be a bit of a rebel. But have I found my quiet place in the sunshine? Damn straight. And it's hard work. And it's painful work. It opened the door of opportunity not until I was 20 years sober to have my son step back in my life. And all of this work in AA's Three Legacies is the only reason that happened. Only reason that happened. So tonight I can say on my knees that your mother was sober today, even for my daughter, who still has not reconciled. But the tapestry of AA's 36 principles say, just show up and do the next right thing. Just live this fully. But no, there's no graduation. There's no time out. I found my quiet place in the bright sunshine. It's in here. It's in here. And if I needed confirmation from that, I stood on the rim of the Grand Canyon and said, it's in here. Thank you for my life.
Amen. Thank you, Anne-Marie. Our next speaker is Dave B. from Consort, Alberta, Canada.
I had to borrow a watch. My name is Dave, and I am an alcoholic. What a lovely, shiny-looking bunch you guys are. You sure you're alcoholics? Well, I know he is.
Thanks.
I had my last drink on November the 21st, 1992. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for saving my life. The only reason I am here sober today is because of those three legacies that have been handed down from drunk to drunk to drunk until they found me face down on the gravel in a city called Edmonton, Alberta. I had my first drink around the age of 16 in high school. I like to say that I can blame my family, my upbringing for my alcoholism, but I can't. And I always feel a little bit disappointed because I grew up in a great home. And I can't point fingers at my parents or my brothers or anything else. In high school, my experience with alcohol came when everyone gathered for a house party before a school dance. And before that, I hadn't really had much to do with drinking. Life was good. And we gathered up, and everybody was mixing things, and I didn't know what to choose or select. Everybody had brought a bottle of something they had taken from their parents. They gave me a tall glass of something red. And instantly, I was in love. Mm-hmm. By the time I was to the bottom of that glass, my career as a social drinker had ended. About 15 minutes. And I like to say, by the time I'd had my second drink, I knew a new freedom and a new happiness. By the time I'd had my third drink, I didn't regret the past and I didn't wish to shut the door on it. Within half an hour, I knew, I comprehended the word serenity and I knew peace. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity had disappeared. My whole attitude and outlook upon life had changed. And from that day forward, alcohol was my best friend. It helped me through every situation in my life. Without alcohol, I couldn't manage and I couldn't cope. I don't have a lot of ribald stories to tell about my drinking because it was all rather pathetic. I drank by myself. I didn't like to party. I didn't like to be around other people. I just liked to drink until I felt good about me. Alone in my own little world. Most of my drinking ended with me face down in the gravel somewhere, face down on a barroom floor, face down, passed out. And when it comes to talking about our three legacies now, I can only share with you what has been shared with me. I've never had an original thought in my life, I'm afraid. Well, I had one once, but after I sobered up, I realized it wasn't that great. So the only thing I do have to share is the experience that's been passed on to me. And as I've been in sobriety and read some of our history and gone back to all of the missteps that occurred along the way and the trial and error that got us to where we are today, I'm so grateful that recovery, unity, and service have survived to be passed down. And I'm equally grateful that some of the things that weren't so wonderful died along the way. You know, rather than sipping coffee out here and visiting, we'd be sucking sauerkraut juice and eating canned tomatoes. You know? So what works, works. You know? I'm a product of treatment centers. That's where Alcoholics Anonymous found me. I never went looking for AA, and I never went looking to sober up. I bounced in and out of treatment centers trying to become a social drinker like I was for that fleeting few minutes. You know, where I could drink and not end up face down in the gravel at the end of every day. In Alberta, we have a government agency, the Alberta Alcohol and Drug Abuse Commission, and they oversee all the treatment centers. And I had a counselor there that I'd phone up quite regularly when I'd been thrown out of the house and the crap hit the fan and my life was in shambles. And I talked to him, and he'd send me off to a treatment center for a couple of weeks of R&R and healthy living and that good stuff. And I loved them. You know, they pick you up, they clean you up, they cook your food, give you a nice place to stay. You know, I started to refer to them as my travel agent. Whenever I was down in the dirt, I'd phone up my travel agent at ADAC, and he'd arrange another holiday for me. And the only thing they required is that you go to a few little sessions throughout the day, and not too much, because we're really sick people and can't handle much, and we're not too smart. So little bits here and little bits there. But you have to go to an AA meeting every night. And I went to the AA meetings, and I attended them faithfully, and I listened to all the stories, and I thought, how pathetic is this? How pathetic. You guys, you sit around here trying to talk each other out of drinking. You know, you can't talk me out of drinking. I can't even talk me out of drinking. You know, I'm not going to listen to you. But I did attend them all, from treatment center to treatment center. And as my life got worse, and you all know it's a progressive illness, and we get to that point where we can't go on, I was faced with that knowing that my life was never going to change, that this was as good as it was going to get. And I knew that Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work because I'd been to so many meetings before, and I'd never been struck happy, joyous, and free in any of them. And I checked into my last treatment center with a plan. And my plan, hello. Yeah. No, it's not for me. My plan was to hide in there for 3 months. And after 3 months were up, I could phone everybody I know, get back in touch with my family, and tell them I haven't had a drink for 3 months. I'm okay now. Then I was going to go to downtown Edmonton, wait for a bus to come roaring down the street, and step off the curb and end it all. Because I knew that's the only way I was going to have any peace. I could die sober with no shame. My children wouldn't have to live with knowing that their dad died a drunk. And that was the master plan I had devised. In that treatment center, I was sitting there minding my own business, watching everybody's shoes as they walked by. And a fellow said, "Do you want to come to a meeting tonight?" And I said, "Sure." Only because he talked to me. I would have gone to Disneyland with him. You know, I was so lonely. And I spent the rest of that afternoon wondering, what kind of meeting are we going to? You know. It didn't dawn on me I'm in a treatment center. We could be going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it wasn't my best day. But I went there, my mind was opening, and I listened to what people were saying, and I realized for the first time that the people were talking about me. I was going there to see what was happening and to listen to this guy who is now my best friend in the world because he had talked to me. And I felt like I'd belonged, finally, you know, and I listened to what was happening. And that little meeting was about 8 people. They met every night throughout the week. And I was amazed. There was a guy there, he hadn't had a drink in 5 months. 5 months. A couple of days later, a guy showed up, and he hadn't had a drink in 3 years. And I was just blown away. What do these people have? You know? And it crossed my mind that there might be hope for me. There just might be hope for me. You know? And without even realizing it at the time, I can look back and say the reason that group survived and the reason that I'm sober is because all three legacies were handed down from person to person to person. The traditions worked. The concepts were alive. Recovery was strong. They cared about each other. And the most important thing in that room was the people. It's all about the people. You know? And God bless them. God bless each and every person who saved my life there. I actually lived in that treatment center for, about a year and a half. Because I had no place to go anyway, so what was the point of rushing out the door? You know, I regained some sanity. I'd come into contact with my higher power. And I waited for a sign and a place to be and a time to go. And it came. And shortly after that, I ended up in Consort, Alberta, where my home is today, where my home group meets every Thursday night. And coincidentally, it's called the Consort Thursday Night Group. Which you're all welcome to attend, but not on the same night. We have 14 chairs. And I think the entire town of Consort with dogs fit in this room. But in that group, I attended it regularly, and I tried to become involved, but there was still something missing. There was something missing. And it wasn't long before I realized it was working with the new people. It was seeing new faces. It was being active and being involved. And it dawned on me what the difference was. I wasn't an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was going to the meetings. I was showing up. But I wasn't involved in carrying the message. I wasn't involved in being of service. I wasn't involved in what we do. We're a society of men and women in action. We're not a society of men and women that get together and drink really crappy coffee. You know? You must be the coffee maker. They fired me. In Canada, we have a snow shoveler. But that group, they knew that there was something wrong. And it wasn't long before they all decided at some secret business meeting that they needed an alternate general service rep. I'd suggested that I'd be perfect for that job. I thought, well, I'm certainly qualified to be alternate almost anything. It doesn't really require doing much. But, of course, as soon as I agreed, the general service rep quit and I was in. And although I was a little bit upset at the time and felt like I'd really been taken in by these hicks in consort, I realized that it was great. It was great for me to become involved. I look back and realize that all those AA meetings I went to, I was a spectator. Just like going to a football game or a hockey game. I'd sit around and watch what was going on, and I'd listen and be entertained. And it was a spectator sport, you know. But I wasn't involved. I wasn't a member of AA, you know. And being in this group and being a member of it and being involved is all the difference it made for me, you know. I have a sponsor, and this, as GSR, I was a little bit whiny about all the things they kept asking me to do. And I said, I'm not really ready to be into this service structure. And he says, it's not about the service structure. That's just what you're given today. It's about being of service to your fellow human beings. You know, get out of yourself and do something useful. Mm. Well, it's hard to argue with that. And he explained to me, and I'm sure you've all heard the analogy of the bar stool with three legs and our three legacies. And for those of you who hadn't heard it, I'm going to run through it because it made everything so clear to me. He said that these three legacies have been handed down, and think of them as the three legs of a bar stool. You're probably familiar with a bar stool. Yes, I am. He said, well, you can take any one of those legs and you can prop it under the seat, and you can kind of be wobbly and balanced there a little bit. But it's going to take the rest of the group to keep you up from falling back down in the gravel. But as long as the whole group is helping to hold you up, you can stay perched there. Life's a little bit better. You're not face down. You know, he said, grab another leg, put it under the seat, and now you're a little more solid. You know, it's going to take fewer people to prop you up and hold you there. You're going to feel a little bit better and more secure. But why not take all three legs and put them on the stool, and everybody in your group can let go and help someone else? That made sense. That made sense to me. And as I was thinking about this talk today, recovery unity service, or is it service unity recovery? Is it unity recovery service? Is it ham, eggs, toast? Toast, eggs, ham. It doesn't really matter. It's all on the plate. It's all on the plate together. I don't get to pick and choose. Just like when I go to the doctor, says, well, I'd like you to change your diet, get some exercise, and take this medication. Well, I'm going to take the medication this week. Next week I'll diet. And in January we'll get to the exercise. You know. That's not what he prescribed, and that's not what was given to us. We were given three legacies, three things that will save our life if we do them. It's that simple. In closing, I just want to share from one of my favorite books. And to me, this sums up everything that was handed down to us. As simple as it could possibly be. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. And finally, I would like to introduce Gloria S. from Roanoke, Virginia.
Hi, everybody. I'm Gloria S. from Roanoke, Virginia, and I'm an alcoholic.
Woo! Hello!
Hey, I didn't know I was that powerful. Let there be light.
Something to tell your grandchildren.
That's right.
I tell you, this is an awesome experience. I am incredibly honored and very moved to participate in the 75th anniversary of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah! Yeah!
This is a God thing.
Yeah.
And without Him, I'm nothing. And it's absolutely evident to me that He participated in every aspect of developing Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, my sobriety date is December the 5th, 1978. It impresses the heck out of me. My home group is the Pass It On group in Roanoke, Virginia. We have four meetings a week. Three of them are closed and one open. We focus on AA conference-approved literature. And if you didn't know that, you're not an AA meeting if you're not using AA conference-approved literature. And I'm going to come at this from a little different angle than the other two, so you'll get a little taste of everything today. I'm going to start off by reading a little bit of what Bill Wilson says in The Language of the Heart and describing the three legacies. And this is on page 129, The Service to Live. He's talking about the group conscience of all Alcoholics Anonymous, and he says, making this plainer, let's look for a moment at a single AA member. Faith alone does not save him. He has to act. Do something. He must carry his message to others. Practice AA principles in all his affairs. Else he slips, he withers, he dies. Look now at an AA group. Can pure faith, mere belief in right principle, and sound tradition make the group a going concern? Not in the least. Each AA group as such must also function, do something. It must serve its appointed purpose, or it too withers and falls apart. Now, our conference delegates were able to apply this principle to AA as a whole. The delegates could see far beyond the single AA and his particular group. In a flash, they took in the stark fact that AA as a whole must continue to function or else it might well suffer that common penalty of faith without works, which is disintegration. Gone was the comfortable illusion that should each AA group tend strictly to its own affairs, God would then reward our short-sightedness by guarding AA as a whole entirely by itself, including our headquarters, AA's public relations, and the welfare of the millions who still don't know. The delegates saw that this would spell faith without work and without responsibility that could never be. Of course, much work would always have to be done. Much responsibility would have to be taken by many. To AA as a whole, every member would need to give a little. And so when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a desperate woman who had suffered that horrible, incomprehensible demoralization. I had moral principles and couldn't live up to them. When I took a drink, I didn't know what I was going to do or where I was going to end up. I started drinking when I was 15 over the death of a friend and the breakup of a relationship. And I came into AA after two suicide attempts, making rounds of the doctors, the counselors, going to the Christian Woman's Club, going back to church, and getting drunk every day. I couldn't stop. I was taken to my first AA meeting, And the only thing that I heard was that third tradition, that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And so I hear people a lot talk about, oh, you don't want to talk about traditions when newcomers are in the room because they won't understand. Well, this newcomer, that's the only thing I understood. And I took that with me, and I said to myself when I left, well, if I get that bad, and the man that took me to the meeting took me home, and he said, I can see you're a little confused and bewildered, so just don't drink. And I said, a piece of cake. And 2 days later, I was bald as an owl, sitting in the bar, you know, beating on the bar, like it says in the big book. And I couldn't stop drinking. So I ended up in that man's kitchen with my moment of truth. I had also been to Al-Anon. I forgot that. So I had these 12 principles down. I had them on my bulletin board. I read them every day. Had it not. So I come to the truth about myself in this man's kitchen with his wife standing there. She is a black belt Al-Anon.
All right.
And they're the best kind.
The best.
And she said to me, what do you see? And I said, I see these principles. This is what I've been looking for all of my life in the bottom of that bottle. I wanted to know how to have a relationship with God, and I didn't know how. Nobody could ever tell me. And this is what AA has done. And I'm so grateful for that. And that's certainly where it led me. Now, that man and his wife became my sponsors. They appointed themselves to me. And it's a good thing. This was hardcore AA that was delivered to me. He didn't mince any words. He told me the truth. He pointed me to the books. He told me to read. You know, he said to buy every book that AA made, pass it on. AA Comes of Age, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, Language of the Heart. He said, you need to read every one of those books and know what is going on here. The big book, of course, is our basic text, and the 12 and 12 is where we worked from on the 12 steps. And he got me started early because I was going to die. And that's what I have to remember. These principles are all set in place so we can carry the message. That's what it's about, carrying the AA message, giving hope to that suffering alcoholic, whether they're sitting in the rooms or whether they're out there still drinking. So as AA develops, you know, when I think about Dr. Bob and Bill getting together, two people, how would they ever know about what we have today? And as groups developed, then you had to have some kind of traditions, had to have some kind of principles in place. And so in the 40s, AA was kind of floundering, and someone wrote to Bill Wilson and told him about the Washingtonians and how they had become 100,000 or better, but they got involved in too many other things. They tried to be all things to all people. And they dissolved just overnight. And so he saw that this might happen to Alcoholics Anonymous. And out of that letter came the 12 traditions, which we resisted, just as we resist the 12 steps. But it's exactly what we need to operate in a group. And the unity of the group, if we don't have unity, if we're not all on the same page about our recovery, if we don't know we're going to die, if we don't get along, we're in trouble. Mm-hmm. So if you go down the list of the 12 traditions, get your group to study them. My group does, because these are very important principles. And yes, you can incorporate them into your life. But today, the message I have to carry is we need to operate it in AA. We need it in AA, working today. If we don't, we won't stay. And out of the groups, you know, Bill Wilson had such great vision. It just really awes me how God used him. And to now have a worldwide fellowship and have to have a GSO board, the World Service board, the Grapevine, you know, they developed the big book and on and on. And these concepts help to bring that together. It gives those trusted servants the power to make decisions. It talks about leadership. It makes us look at what we are doing and staying in a framework so we will not die. Now, my personal experience, I'm going to tell you a little bit about that briefly. In 1984, the treatment center started busing their people to our facilities, to AA meetings. And it was inundating us. Now, I'm not criticizing them. I'm just saying this is what we had to do to help AA survive. We had one group, my home group at that point, there were probably maybe 30 members, and they had 6 busloads of treatment center people coming in. There were over 100 people there at a meeting. And the spirit was being watered down. And this fellow, he's dead now, he and I were standing in the meeting. We were absolutely like sardines. You couldn't carry a message. You know, the spirit was just too watered down. And he said to me, "We need to do something. Let's start a meeting." And so I went home and called my sponsor, and my sponsor said, "You get those 12 traditions out. You get the pamphlet, the group, and you study those and apply those, and you can have a really good, strong group." And so 6 of us started a group that became a very powerful group, all from those 12 traditions. And as time moved on, about a little over six years ago, we started another group in our valley because we looked around and we saw that people were missing the point. You know, there's so much going on today. And, you know, Dr. Bob said, "Let's keep this thing simple. Let's keep the psychobabble out of it." And that's all I need to say, I think. And so there was a few of us that we really wanted the AA message to survive. And we got together and said, "We're going to have a group that's a real AA meeting." Have you all been to a meeting that was supposed to be AA but didn't sound like it? Well, we wanted a real one, and we didn't care if anybody came, but, I mean, we wanted to carry the message. But we wanted a real AA meeting. So there were 6 of us. We started with 2 meetings a week. Now, 6 years later, there's 30 home group members. We have 4 meetings a week. We do 4 potlucks a year, and we invite Al-Anon. We got Al-Anon to start a group. We invite Al-Anon to participate. So we have AA and Al-Anon speakers 4 times a year to carry the message. We also had started last year a conference on the Big Book. We bring somebody in from out of town, 2 guys or 2 women or whatever, but we have people come in to share the AA message. It was a powerful weekend. We've just added 1 more event that we're going to do in the spring, and it's going to be all about Unity Service and Recovery because people are starved for this. My home group just finished its group inventory, and I don't know if y'all are familiar with the group inventory, but if you want a healthy group, that's what you need to do. We spent a lot of time on this, and we just went through the 12 concept checklist. And it was very interesting, very informative. And we found out some things that we needed to learn. And taking a group inventory, what we're doing is seeing what more can we do to carry this AA message. And that's what they do at the General Service Board. You know, they're looking at who else can we reach. There's countries all over the world that still don't have Alcoholics Anonymous yet. And there's books that need to be translated and the message to be carried. So we do have a very powerful responsibility. And we decided, the group said, "We want to add 1 more thing," you know, talking about this Unity Service and Recovery, and there was a lot of enthusiasm for that. You know, old Clancy says, you can always see a group who is big on sponsorship because you have a pocket of enthusiasm. Because the message I have today is, it really goes back to that one alcoholic carrying the message to the other. What kind of message are you carrying? What kind of message are you receiving? Is it the AA message? Do you have a strong message of recovery? I went to a conference not long ago out in Las Vegas, and I heard this man talking about meeting-based sobriety. Well, I hadn't heard that term before. But do you have meeting-based sobriety? We have so many meetings today that we can just go sit in a chair and think that we're doing something. I personally want to be out there. I want to be part of the action. The title of our conference is The Spring into Action. You know, we want to get in there. I had an old-timer call me one time. He had had 16 years of sobriety. He was ahead of the first railroad recovery program. Got drunk, died drunk. And he knew a lot about recovery. But he said, Gloria, there's two types of people in AA. There's a type of person who does all the work, and there's a type of person who complains about the person who does all the work. And he said, you want to be that person that's in there doing all the work. And, you know, I understood what Anne Marie was talking about. When I put myself in a position to try to carry the AA message, it's not a popular thing. I was told early on this is not a popularity contest. Anytime you're trying to work any of these 36 principles by carrying a message, there are going to be people that are going to criticize you. We cannot take that personally. They're afraid. It's hard to deal with people that are being honest. I know I ran from them. I always ran to the people that would kill me and ran away from the people that could help me. So I'm going to close with this comment from Bill Wilson. If as AA members, we can each refuse public prestige and renounce any desire for personal power, if as a movement we insist on remaining poor, if we steadfastly decline all political, sectarian, or other alliances, we shall avoid internal division and adverse public notoriety. If as a movement we remain a spiritual entity concerned only with carrying our message to fellow sufferers, then only can we most effectively complete our mission, which in effect is to pray, lead us not into temptation. Let us not be spoiled. For so long as we shall humbly meditate in this spirit upon our great yesterdays, just so long will God grant us our vision of tomorrow. Thank you.